Welcome to the Coalition for Physician Wellbeing's podcast, The Wellbeing Connector, where through our guests, we explore ideas for making healthcare a better place to work and serve. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Today, I am thrilled and honored to be joined by Sue Kiernan. I met Sue recently when she joined the Coalition, and I've been really impressed by her passion to serve. She started her professional career as a speech and language pathologist, and then worked her way up through different healthcare executive leadership roles in large health systems. Sue is now a leadership coach who focuses mostly on healthcare. She founded her business, Centered on Success, in 2000, and during that time has coached hundreds of providers, including nurses, advanced practice providers, physicians, and leaders at all levels. Well, thank you, Sue, for joining us today. I'm so pleased you're able to join us for our podcast on the Coalition for Physician Wellbeing.
I'm very happy to be here, Michael. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to jump right in. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about, I know you worked for about 25 years as a speech pathologist. And from there, you went on to become a coach. How did that work? And what happened there? Is there a story?
Sure. There's always a story, right?
Absolutely.
So during the time that I was a speech and language pathologist, I, like a lot of us clinicians, had several different roles to play, including moving more up into leadership positions as I had more experience. And it was just kind of a funny thing. I have always known that it was I guess I'll say divinely inspired, because I really started having a sense of unrest and a sense of not being as fulfilled as I had in the past. And it had nothing to do with the organization. It was just more this sense of, I guess you could say, kind of an unrest in my soul, that it was time for me to start a new chapter in my life. So The interesting part is that I came into coaching having absolutely no idea what coaching was. I did leave my position and made a decision that I was going to start my own consulting business, and thought at the time that I would probably specialize more in presentation coaching, communication coaching, and training and that kind of thing. And at the time, as I said, knew nothing about coaching. This was in 1999, when coaching was barely becoming even an entity. And so if I would have had a coach, I would have certainly engaged a coach. But since I didn't, I bought Nelson Bull's book. You might be familiar with it, What Color Is Your Parachute? And sort of coached myself through it. And one of the things that he had recommended was to reach out to your network and let them know that you were in a career transition. And so I did that. And it was really interesting. One of my colleagues, as I was describing to her that, I was beginning to look at a new career, she just flat out said to me, she said, "Sue, I think you would make a great coach." And I said, "A what?" And she said, "Have you not heard of that?" And I said, "No, but I'm by nature very curious." And so I looked it up and ended up realizing that there was a sort of an informational session right in Denver, which is very close to where I lived. And I went to that, and within 30 minutes of sitting there, it was like, "Yep, this is what I'm going to do next." And so I was able, I feel that I was able to really take a lot of my natural inclination for wanting to bring out the best in people and move it forward in a different way. I wouldn't even say a deeper way, a different way. And I have, since then I completed all my training and my certifications. And as I look back, it's just been really a huge blessing, and I love every minute of what I do.
Did you have any early experiences in coaching that really stood out for you to help you really appreciate that this is it?
Well, as part of your training, of course, you are exposed to a lot of coaching. And then I did, of course, end up working and have over the years many times worked with coaches. I think for me, it was the realization that my coach was really helping me find my own answers. Things that I, really just hadn't had a chance to really think about. And also someone that was just my advocate and was there to help me be all that I was capable of being.
Very nice. So how did you apply that? Was it just in healthcare, or was it still in healthcare? Or did you apply it broadly, or who were your first clients?
Yeah, so that's interesting too. I started out and I really did not have a defined population. And so I was coaching, I've always done primarily organizational coaching. And after about a year, and I was also doing some just personal life coaching, but after about a year or so, I just could sense something was missing. And I realized what was missing were my people. I had spent all of my career in healthcare, and I realized that I really missed them. And, I know healthcare folks because, I've been one myself. And so I made an intentional move to very, very almost exclusively confine my work to healthcare. I do have some non-healthcare clients, but they are by far the minority.
Very nice. And so who are your typical clients within healthcare? Is it broad, or is there some subpopulation within healthcare that you tend to like the best?
Well, a couple things. First of all, for a lot of years, I've done a tremendous amount of work with nursing at all levels, staff levels, mid leadership, CNO level. And there's pretty much always been an emphasis in my work on leadership development, because as you well know, it's interesting in healthcare how one day you're a clinician and the next day you're a leader. And you end up kind of just because you were really good in a clinical setting does not necessarily mean that you're going to be successful right off the bat in a leadership position. And so that's been a population that I've really loved working with because, they want to be successful in their work. And they just need, they need a partner and they need tools. The other work that I very much have enjoyed is working with larger groups, providing retreats and experiences that help these wonderful folks reconnect with their calling to be healers in the world. And we all know that right now it's a real challenge to stay connected to that that inner part of us that we may have known about forever or maybe later in our life, but it is truly what we were meant to be and meant to do. And we know that in this day and age, even before COVID, the pace has picked up so tremendously, and some of the personal agency of healthcare providers has been usurped. And so at the end of the day, the only thing that will ever hold us in good stead is our own sense that we are making a difference in the world and that we are here doing what we were meant to do. So I very much have enjoyed whether it's a group experience or an individual experiencing, helping people go back and reclaim that.
That's beautiful. How do you go about doing that? It's a tough thing. I mean, people are so busy, as you mm-hmm. mentioned, they have so many stresses in their lives. When you help them reconnect with their purpose, how do you help? Is it simple just asking them what's your purpose, or is there more to it? What do you do?
Well, that's really where the coaching model comes into play. It's primarily through what we call inquiries, which are experiences that we create for our clients to come at that a different way. Because if I just ask you, Michael, you know, what's your purpose? Maybe you'll be able to answer that right away. But for most of us, we don't tend to spend a lot of time there. So one example might be, you know, recall a time in your life when you had a sense that this is what you were meant to do. And I have had some amazing experiences with large groups or individuals of really going back in their life and realizing, you know, it was that time that this, or it was, I watched my dad, or, you know, whatever it may be. But there was this sort of pivotal point for many people. And sometimes it was really early in their life. And sometimes it was later in their life where they all of a sudden realized, this isn't what I'm meant to do. And so one of the roles of a coach is to help people connect with their own wisdom, with their own knowing, by doing what we really pretty much call exploring. And, you know, there are specific exercises, of course, that we use for that. But they're all really framed around our own lived experience, because that's really what informs all of us, is our own lived experience.
So did you have, when you went through the coaching yourself, as you learned the techniques, did you have a pivotal moment that kind of set you in a certain direction?
You know, I would say that in terms of this question you're asking me around, you know, calling and purpose, when I was, probably about 10 years old, or maybe around in there, I have a brother who has some developmental disabilities, and my parents would take him to the speech and language clinic at the university setting that was close to us. And I do remember very clearly going along sometimes and watching, you know, what the speech pathologist was doing. And it really was like, that's what I want to be.
Oh, really?
And so I never, ever, all the way through high school, all the way through college, I always knew that I wanted to be a speech and language pathologist, which really is, you know, not completely disassociated from being a coach, because it really is about supporting people and helping people.
Interesting. So tell me more. So your transition out of speech pathology was you felt that more was needed. You were looking for a little bit more. Did you find it in coaching?
Absolutely.
So what did coaching give you that speech pathology didn't? What was the new calling?
Well, I would say that, you know, from a clinical perspective, whether it's speech pathology or, you know, any of the other, you know, clinical areas, you know, when you are a clinician, you are focused on helping to heal something. You are the expert. People come to you because there's a problem to be solved or a situation that needs to be healed. Whether it's a communication problem or any other kind of problem. So what's different about coaching that I so enjoy and appreciate is that I'm not the expert in coaching. My job is to walk on a journey with my client, and through my skills and training, ask the questions that help them either find their own answers or create opportunities for them to look at something from a different perspective, to do some experimenting themselves, to get the outcome that they're after. And that's, you know, one of the things that's really important in coaching is that it isn't just a chat. It's not a conversation. It's really a structured conversation that is a longitudinal one. So coaching is not something that it's typically not something that happens episodically. It's something that happens over a period of time. So, you know, I think it's, for me, it's just intriguing to always remember that as coaching, as the saying goes, in coaching, we always hold the client creative, resourceful, and whole. So there's nothing for us to heal or fix.
So do you see organizations now making use of coaching the way they should, or are they not?
Well, I think that coaching is beginning to be more and more utilized, certainly has been over the last 10 years. But the truth is that there are many more opportunities for, and I'm just going to focus in on healthcare here, but it would be true for any industry. There are so many opportunities for coaching to be utilized, either as a way of people learning something or as an as a continuation of let's just say that an organization is providing, let's call it conflict resolution training or something like that. You know, we don't learn in a classroom, whether it's virtual or physical. We learn by doing. And so what coaching provides is a structure for someone to practice and come back and kind of unpack it, what worked, what didn't work, what might I do differently. So I think that, you know, certainly the organizations that I see utilizing this modality are the organizations that are having leaders that really, and clinicians that really continue to expand their capabilities and also have the potential of having well-being in their work.
Hmm. Do you see them using other things like peer support or other things in complementing coaching or instead of coaching as well? Or what are the other different modalities that organizations might choose from?
So in terms of healthcare, there are a few that I'm very aware of. And I think especially right now, if we look at, even if we look right now our contemporary situation here with the virus, organizations, healthcare organizations, offer, and it isn't just COVID, they've been offering it, but they offer something called peer support, which is where, let's just say physician related, where, you know, one physician will really be, like a buddy to another one and, you know, be able to kind of check in on them, how you doing, that kind of thing, and really be a, you know, a trusted partner with them. So that's one thing. And then, you know, as we look at the other modalities, certainly we have, you know, counseling, psychological services, et cetera. And certainly during this COVID virus, we all know that the level of stress that all of our providers are experiencing is monumental. Where coaching fits into there is not in place of any of these things, but as an extension of probably any situation where someone would really like to have someone that they could talk to on a regular basis, but in a structured format. Because as I mentioned before, coaching is not a chat. It's a, you know, it's a very structured conversation and very much forward leaning, looking at where do you want to go with all of this. So, you know, sometimes we kind of look at the difference between psychotherapy and coaching. And, you know, that is a line that is important for all of us to recognize. And to make it, you know, pretty simple in my mind, at least, coaching is always, as I said, coming from the perspective that there's nothing, that there's not a wound or an illness that needs to be addressed and healed. Whereas therapy, really, there's something there that needs attention from a healing perspective. And so, you know, sometimes clients are using both psychologists and coaches. I think the difference between a peer support buddy and a coach would be that a coach is a completely, objective person who does not have a relationship to speak of with, you know, a collegial relationship, although they could. But in general, they tend to be somebody who is trained to be a coach. And so they're able to apply that coaching model in their work. And it's a formal relationship. Whereas, you know, a support person might be, maybe we could say a little bit more of an informal relationship.
And what do you see as the roles of families in these types of discussions? I know you were married to a physician for many years, and obviously being part of a physician family must have affected how you think about this as well.
Definitely. I consider myself really lucky that, I mean, for a number of reasons, of course, personally, first of all, but, you know, in my work that I do, you know, I do have that context of knowing physicians and having some sense, a very good sense, actually, of, you know, some of their biggest challenges and how most of them tend to approach the world. And so, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things that I certainly believe, and I think most coaches do, is that when you're working with a client, you are not working in a compartmentalized way, because we are way more than our work. And so it would be pretty unusual to not have a person's family, their family situation show up. And many times what that looks like is, you know, where's the balance? You know, if we say something is important to us, then it's how we behave that really demonstrates that. And one of the tools that we use in coaching is what's called the wheel of life, which is really kind of a cool, very simple thing. It's just a wheel with a lot of spokes in it that each have something in them. Like one might be family, work, finances, whatever. And our client rates themselves in terms of the level of fulfillment that they are experiencing there. And that sometimes is extremely revealing to folks, to clients, as to why they have this sense of dissonance and this sense that they're not as fulfilled as they'd like to be. And sometimes it has to do with the fact that they, by their very nature, have focused so hard on their profession that although these other things are important to them, there's no time for them, or very limited time. And so, again, the client brings to the coaching agenda what it is that they want to work on. But some of these tools can really kind of help folks see, oh, wow, yeah, if that's important to me, I need to figure out some ways to make it more important. And that would be where a conversation would ensue about how might you go about that.
Have you seen some big improvements in that regard, where people were able to focus on it and make some drastic improvements?
Absolutely.
Tell me about one. Give me an example. What kind of things, how do they make those improvements?
Well, I guess, you know, maybe shifting just a little bit. One of the models that I use extensively in my work is emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. Because we all know that sometimes people can be so bright and so successful, and yet they are really struggling in their leadership position or their clinical position or whatever their position might be. And so I can think of one client in particular that was just getting, you know, a lot of negative feedback about his interactions with people, his difficulty in creating functional teams, etc. And it was really amazing. You know, one of the things is that, you know, what's so lovely about emotional intelligence as opposed to intellectual intelligence is that, you know, we can change our emotional intelligence. We can increase it. And so through, you know, a series of exercises and so forth, what became so clear was like this individual was just like the nicest person, and they simply were not aware of how they were coming across to people. And so as we were able to do some work around that, it was just like the clouds opened. Because what was really unfortunate about this is that this person so wanted to have a successful, you know, leadership position, and he was just kind of getting in his own way. And so as we were able to introduce new tools, new ways of creating those stronger emotional intelligence skills, his performance shifted from problematic to doing very well. And it was really lovely to see what that gave him, what he was able to now have for himself, because it was something that actually was really important to him.
I've heard you use the term inner-directed healer. Can you tell people what that means to you?
Yes. So that is a term that I have been developing over the past several years, probably, and I don't know if it's used by others, but I find it to be as descriptive as I can be about the kind of work that I want to continue doing. And by that, I mean that any healing profession, you know, whether you're a physician or any other type of healer, anyone who is caring for another person during their time of need is a healer. And my desire is to help reestablish that within that person, is that the minute that we are not operating from our own values, from our own moral compass, from our own sense of what is intuitively right for us, is the minute that we begin to compromise our ability to be a healer. And so in these days, you know, where there's so much change going on in healthcare and so many physicians are feeling almost like victims, sort of helpless, you know, to be able to be their own personal agent. There are many things that they can't change, but there's one thing that they always can do, and that is to be true to themselves. So we could use terms like authenticity, wholeness, and I think that's where well-being really comes into play, is that I certainly include being inner-directed as a descriptor of well-being. So that when we have challenging situations that come up and we feel very conflicted, instead of blaming or throwing our hands up in the air, we go back to our own core values, our own moral compass, and we ensure for ourselves that there is resonance there. And you know, with all the moral distress that is going on right now in healthcare, this is going to be one of the things that's going to continue to be really, really important. And that's where a coach can really help an individual sort of tap back into that, and from there make some decisions on how they can proceed.
Excellent. So you've done a lot over the last bunch of years, and your career really has transitioned. What's next for you, Sue? Where are you going?
I am going right where I am, and that is that I want to continue. You know, I'm at the point in my career where a large component of this, Michael, is really about being of service. Not that it wasn't before, but it certainly is now. Is that, you know, I have been very blessed in my life in many ways, but certainly one of those important ways is through healthcare. And I can say unequivocally that my experience working in the faith-based healthcare system that I worked in for many years, there is no doubt about the fact that I was formed in many ways by being in that culture. And so my role now, as I see it, is to be able to use some of my own skills, my own experience, and certainly my own desire to give back.
Wonderful. Is there anything else you'd hope that someone who listens from today's episode might get out of this, or any particular thing we might have missed?
Well, I don't think we've missed anything, but I guess I just would really encourage every one of us during this time of tremendous stress, and whether it's a personal issue, a professional issue, whatever it is, that we stay grounded. We didn't really talk about that, but that is another huge element of well-being, is to be able to find ways to stay grounded and centered during this time when the world feels like it's just, you know, spinning out of control. So whatever we can do as individuals, whether it's meditation, prayer, exercise, you know, any of these things that help us just sort of turn off the world, even for 5 minutes, is going to be one of the ways that's going to help us get through this, because when we do this, we get our feet back on the ground.
And before we go, do you have anything, any final thought or reflection you want to share with the audience?
I do. I have one of my very favorite readings. And this is a reading that comes from the book Seasons of Your Heart by a Benedictine sister by the name of Macrina Wiedeker. And I obtained her permission to adapt this a little bit, but very, very minorly. And so the title is called, "And What Does It Mean to Be a Healer?" I asked. And a wise old woman stepped forward. "To be a healer," she said, "is to be given a second heart. It is to care so deeply that you show your ache in person. To be a healer is to be unashamed of tears. It is to be well and broken and built up all in the same moment. Blessed are you if you can heal others with a heart that feels, with a heart that hurts, and with a heart that loves. And blessed are you if you can heal others with a heart that serves, and a heart that sees the need before it's spoken. To be a healer is to forget yourself for a moment, and then to find yourself in the very act of getting lost. To be a healer is to be an expert in the miracle of being careful with another's pain. It is to be full of the willingness of forever reaching out to and picking up and holding carefully those who hurt."
Wow. With that, I want to thank you for your time today, and thank you for joining us on the podcast.
You are welcome, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, that's our show for today. I want to thank Sue Kiernan for joining us today and for sharing both her insights and personal story. Her company is Centered on Success, and you can find more information about Centered on Success at centeredonsuccess.com. If you wish to learn more about the Coalition, please visit our website at www.forphysicianwellbeing.org. One feature of the website is our membership directory, where members can find contact information for Sue and many of our other members. You can also check out the Coalition on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. I also want to thank our volunteers and the staff from the Coalition who have made this podcast possible. Finally, I'd like to thank Acesis, A-C-E-S-I-S, Incorporated, for sponsoring my time working on this podcast. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and his guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Coalition for Physician Wellbeing, its board, or other members of the Coalition. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Brown, wishing our caregivers out there meaning, purpose, and joy in the practice of medicine. Together we are stronger. Until next time.